You're listening to the Assistants Together podcast. I'm so grateful that you're here this week, Annie. It's so lovely to be able to welcome you to Assistants Together. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to have this chat with you. As we were talking offline, I feel like we could just sit and talk for hours. So yeah, I'm really excited to be here.
I'm Henrietta Barker, and you're listening to the Assistants Together podcast. Welcome if this is your first time joining us. This is a weekly podcast where assistants and industry leaders share their insight and experience with us. It is great to have you here if it is your first time, and do take a look at the episodes that we've recorded over the last year with some incredible guests. I'm excited to share this episode with you too. And do get in touch on social, follow us at Assistants Together, pretty much everywhere. The first time I spoke to you, I hadn't realised that you had had such a life-changing event. I knew about the whole assistant, and when we spoke, we had a conversation about the whys and what your why was for whole assistant and your kind of career, but we didn't cover a part of your life that shaped exactly who you are now and what you're creating for other people and what you want to share. Are you happy to talk me through, and everyone listening, what happened?
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny because I wasn't sharing my story back when you and I first met, because, you know, it's personal and I wasn't sure if it could help people. But then once I came out with my story, I was impressed at how much it helped people. And then it just makes me want to share it all the more.
My guest this week is Annie Croner. She's the founder of Whole Assistant, an online platform and community which she formed to provide a positive place where assistants can go to transform their lives and uplevel their careers. Now, Annie is an executive assistant herself, and a few years ago, she had a completely life-changing experience, life-altering experience, which has driven her to help assistants achieve their goals and manage everything on their plates while finding freedom from overwhelm and burnout. And when you listen to this episode, you're going to realize exactly what Annie's why is, what her driving force is to help other people create whole lives where they're able to do the things that they want, to achieve the things that they want, all while actually looking after themselves. Her story is so extraordinary, and I'm so grateful that she has chosen to share it with all of us. I feel like it's a huge privilege for us to be able to hear her own experience and to just share some fantastic ways that we can all really look at what is happening in our lives and find strategies and support in order to be able to achieve the things that we want to. I hope you enjoy this episode.
So, back in 2012, I was living in my hometown of Twin Falls, Idaho, here in the States, and I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy, and I wasn't feeling fulfilled, and it felt like my life was an uphill battle. I was married to my first husband at the time, and I'd been in Idaho, back in Idaho for 5 years. That's where I was raised. But I met and married my husband in Boston, so I didn't foresee Idaho being in our future. And then he got a job offer back in Idaho. And back in 2012, we had been there for about 5 years. And I was working at the time as an assistant to the CEO of an accounting firm. And I was working 60 plus hour weeks. It was in the middle of, you know, tax season, which is really crazy for accounting firms. And I'd made like one friend in the entire 5 years I'd been living back in Idaho. I love being closer to my family. That is one thing that I really enjoyed, is that I'm very close with my family. And so I did enjoy that piece of it. But I actually suffered a stroke and I suffered it at the office. So I went to bed on March 14th, 2012, the day before corporate tax day here in the States. And I woke up with a splitting headache, and I got up and I took some Advil and I went back to sleep. And I woke up and I went to the office the next day, and I just told my colleagues and coworkers, I said, "Hey, I'm just feeling a little off today. There's something that's just feeling off. I had a splitting headache last night. You know, I think I'm still recovering from that." And so about mid-morning, I got up and I went to the back of the office to grab something to eat. And I had the stroke back there. And I knew I needed to get back up to the front of the office. So I made my way back to the front of the office. And by the time I made it up to the front of the office, my left leg was dragging behind me. My left arm had gone rigid and was curled up. And the left side of my face was drooping. And I had plenty of words to say, but I couldn't actually voice any of them. And so I just kind of put my head down on the desk. My coworkers noticed that they needed to call an ambulance. And so they did. And I had this epiphany as I was in the helicopter flying, because they had to life flight me to Boise, which is like the nearest capable facility to be able to help me. And I had this epiphany as I'm being life flighted, and this wave of peace come over me. I was like literally dying in the helicopter. And I had this thought that like this wave of peace, and then this knowing that if I were to die in that moment, like I was totally okay with that. That was totally fine with me. Just this overwhelming sense of peace that like I had lived my life and I loved my life. And then I knew that if I survived, that everything would be different. I just had this knowing that like this was a missing piece for me, the thing that needed to happen in order to change my life. And even in the helicopter on my way to the hospital, I had this knowing. And so we get to the hospital and there's a flurry of activity around me. I look at the clock and then I go under, and then like 3 or 4 hours later, I wake up in this room, the same room, and there's nobody there. And they'd gone in and they cleared out the clots that had broken loose and went up into my brain, which is what caused the stroke. So my carotid artery had randomly dissected the night before. Like the doctors called it a random dissection. Mm-hmm. And then of course it clotted around the dissection, and then the clot broke loose and went up into my brain. And then that's what caused me to stroke out. So it was really interesting though, that like I had this knowing that everything would be different. And then within the course of the year, I got pushed out of my job. And I was basically told that I wasn't worth what the company was paying me, and they withheld my bonus. And I was really, I wasn't treated very well through my recovery period. And then I also lost my marriage, lost my job, lost my marriage, moved back with my parents, all within the course of a year of stroke. And to say I'd hit a low point would be an understatement for sure. But through that, like I realized as I start to put my life back together that I was completely disconnected from who I was as a person. Like I didn't know what made me happy. I didn't know what I wanted. I thought that I could make everything work if I just stayed, in a bad marriage, if I just stayed in a town that wasn't a good fit. So when I started Whole Assistant, I knew that eventually I wanted to share my story. I knew that that was coming sooner or later. And back last year in 2020, when everything kind of went crazy in the world, I just had my son, Sammy. I'm remarried, had my son, Sammy. And I was trying to work my full-time job and I was trying to take care of him. And I was like, enough. Like we just need to take better care of ourselves. And so I shifted the focus of Whole Assistant to be able to take better care of ourselves. That's the focus, and to really learn what it means to set those parameters around our time and energy. And so, yeah, that's my story. It's one that I hoped would have an impact, but I was unsure how it would have an impact. And I've been really blessed to see how much my story has blessed others who have gone through something similar, or who have been made redundant, or who have suffered some trauma in their work life as well. So I also became a certified life coach in 2020 so that I could actually help other assistants kind of manage these things on a more personal level. And that has been really powerful to see my clients' transformation and just walk them through the process as well. So
that is an incredibly moving story and so powerful in its, in your ability to have an understanding that your life would change in that pivotal moment, that you knew that you had a deep sense that something was wrong in amongst all the chaos of the people and the helicopter and, you know, the paramedics and all of this, that you still had this sense of clarity. That must have been, now I'm not saying it wasn't hard after that in the sense that it takes time for things to filter through, but in that instant you had that clarity. Did that stay with you? Or when things started to change around you, like your marriage breaking down and losing your job, and did that clarity stay with you, or is it something you had to revisit later on down the line?
What was really interesting is I think that moment was the most powerful moment of my life, in that like I was just experiencing so much peace when I shouldn't have been. Like it's the most peaceful I've ever felt in my entire life. And so that moment of clarity, it's something that I come back to a lot because it was just so defining for me. And that knowing, like that knowing beyond knowing that things were going to change if I were to survive this. Now, I'm not going to say it did not feel terrible to go through all of that, and that the following year was just not one of the most torturous years of my life, because it certainly was.
Yeah.
But that knowing that there was something beyond it that was going to be much better than where I was at prior, that was something that I think I came back to and almost clung to as that following year unfolded. And as I did lose my job and did lose my marriage, that is something that definitely I would say was very helpful for me. Yeah.
Yeah, to have that. I feel like in very big periods of change, often when I listen to other interviews with people and they've been through really big traumatic life events, whether it's illness or losing everything or, you know, these kind of stories that you hear, there's this thread that runs through it, which is, I always wished that it hadn't had to get to that point before I took a look at what was wrong. Like I didn't even want the things that I was working towards, maybe, or I wasn't even enjoying any of the things in my life, but I thought that's what I was supposed to do. Now, these kind of external things are not the same, obviously, as a major health incident, but when you speak about it, this acknowledgement that letting go of those things was okay in the sense that they weren't right for you at that point in your life. You'd been working towards something that didn't suit you, that was wrong in some way. It feels like that understanding that when things go wrong, big things happen, that it's a clarity of understanding that it wasn't necessarily what you wanted anyway. Do you feel like that's how it was for you?
I think for me, I didn't even know who I was as a human. Like I didn't have any idea what I wanted. I didn't even know who I was. All I knew was that I was just running around trying to make everybody else around me happy, hoping that that would save my marriage. And, you know, cause I knew that my husband and I were having issues and I thought that I could single-handedly fix it.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'm like, well, I will do whatever it takes and I'm not giving up on anything. And I think God knew that. And I think the universe gave me this stroke as a gift to be like, nope, reset. Cause then post-stroke, I had to prioritize myself and my recovery. I couldn't hold my marriage together and prioritize myself too. Like I just couldn't do that anymore. And so things just kind of naturally progressed from there. And then, you know, I had to ask myself those hard questions of like, if nobody else were around me right now, what would I want? Like, I had no idea what I wanted. All I knew was that like, I had made this commitment and I was going to hold to it. Yeah. And I have this job and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And, like I had no idea what I actually wanted at that point in my life. And so I think I needed something like the stroke to happen in order to point out to me, in order to build that self-trust. Like I just didn't trust myself at all. Mm. I didn't trust that inner voice. I trusted everybody else's voice for me. And so, which is kind of scary, right? Like it's a scary place to be when you don't even know, when you can't even recognize who you are as a human. And so I think one of the biggest takeaways during that year of rebuilding was like, I learned to trust myself because I had no other option.
Yeah. Sometimes when all options are taken away, you do get the best result for yourself, right? Like there's that time and space to really understand what you want. I'm not convinced anyway that any of us, particularly coming into the workforce, really have any idea. You know, I certainly didn't really have any idea who I was. I was looking to other people to shape my interests, my goals even. It was like, look around in a company, who would I like to be in this business, you know, and kind of like use role models, which is healthy and great. But because culturally we are used to being able to do that, there are very few opportunities or times in our lives where we can really assess what we want as individuals. It's very, very difficult once you have a life created, as it were, with all the kind of responsibilities like marriage or children or jobs. How do you unpick that without being forced into it? You know, like actually forced to take stock of where you are.
Yeah, that's a tough question, right? So I think first of all, we have to get really clear on our values and we have to really know what matters most to us. And if something feels out of alignment, we actually need to look at that, truly look at it. And that's the thing. Like I wasn't looking at any of those things. I was covering over with, I can fix it. Instead of like actually looking at it and going, do I want to fix this? Do I want to make this work? Is this what I truly want? And so I think it really does come down to, you know, asking yourself the question. And I'm reading a book right now. I cannot remember the name of the book, but anyway, and this guy asked himself a question of like, if I truly deeply love myself, would this be acceptable to me? And so we need to ask ourselves the hard questions and we need to really be honest with ourselves. And if something isn't working for you, you know, figuring out a plan or working with someone to figure out a plan to move beyond it or to move past it or to set it aside, is what I would recommend. And I think a lot of people in the workforce are experiencing burnout. And I think it's like the frog in water scenario, you know, where they've just been in their circumstance for so long that they and they don't really want to evaluate it, that they actually don't take the time to really genuinely figure out for themselves what it is they do want and start working towards that.
And when you speak about alignment, I want, if you wouldn't mind clarifying it or kind of explaining it, but to me, so for years, I didn't really understand it. I mean, I understood the concept of being in alignment, and I understood the concept of being in alignment with the things that I wanted. What I didn't really take into consideration for a long time was how it felt. Like I didn't say, these are the things that I want because I want to feel this way. And for me, if we're looking at values and working out what's important, is it important to consider how you want to feel in that? Because like I can do to-do lists from now until forever. I love them. And I love setting goals. Like goal setting is like a huge endorphin rush for me. I love that feeling of like, I know what I'm going to do. But if you're in a point where you don't know, or you're not sure how to find out what you want, is it important to set or look at this kind of alignment in a how you feel sense, or is it the kind of external actions you want to take, or a combination of both?
Yes. So I'm a big fan of Brooke Castillo and the Life Coach School method of thought around this. So our thoughts create our feelings, which create our actions, which create our results. And I think oftentimes we skip to actions because we're trying to make ourselves feel better. So we try and do it backwards. We try to act our way to feeling better. Yeah. And then our life becomes one big game of whack-a-mole, right? Because then we're constantly going around, well, if I just do this, I'll feel better. And if I do just do this, I'll feel better. And so we work out to try and feel better. And that works for a little while because of the endorphins, you know, and then, you know, we're just going to check our email so that we know what's on our plate the next day, you know, all those thoughts that we tell ourselves, when in actuality, we do need to get in touch with our inner self. And when I say alignment, I mean, you'll know, like if you're actually paying attention to how you feel, you'll know whether something is out of alignment because it will feel weird or off in your gut. Like, so alignment is really just like a gut check, checking in with your innermost self and being like, okay, something feels off to me here. And instead of ignoring it, like I did for years, I'd be like, oh, whatever, that's fine. We actually need to tap into that. We actually need to tune into that and ask ourselves what it is that feels off. You know, what is it that's feeling off for me here? What can I do to rectify it? Do I need to set a boundary? Do I need to say no here? And actually honoring yourself by following through on what will actually kind of alleviate that feeling of like feeling out of alignment in our gut. So it's really about checking our innermost self and checking with our gut to make sure that we are acting from a place that feels true to us as humans, and not simply trying to make the external circumstance go away by just doing whatever it was that was asked of us.
Yeah. So I personally, I don't want to make this all about me, but no. I'm not asking for, you know, coach me as well, please. But, you know, it's for me, I spent many, many years where I didn't really know what I wanted at all. And this idea of checking in with myself, I'd spent such a long time lying, not in a nasty way, but to myself about what I could cope with, what was fine, what was okay with work, what was all right with my circumstances. That checking in point was something I couldn't do because I couldn't get to that place. I didn't know how to access that part. And I suppose that's why working with a coach or someone to help you be able to do that is so powerful. Because for a long time, I was super stuck, like so stuck. It didn't matter what I tried, nothing changed. And I know that that was because I was only interested in trying to look at external things. Like you said, working out, food, you know, work harder, all those kind of things. But I suppose it can be challenging to know how you really feel about something or what impact it's having if you're not used to, or you haven't been able to get to the point where you can access those feelings. Does that make sense? Like, it's kind of, it can be a challenge to get to the point where you can tell yourself the truth about how you feel about a situation. Because that's the scary bit. Like, that seems to me like that's the really scary bit. Like, this is rubbish. I hate it. I don't actually like my job, or I hate living in this place, or whatever it is. That's hard to access that, because that means change. And that, to me, I couldn't get over that little hurdle into that space, because I knew that everything else would fall apart once I did.
Yes. And that's the thing. Like, I feel like if we're actually going to be honest with ourselves, some things will fall apart and we're going to have to grieve those things. And also, like, I feel like it's the bravest work we'll do as humans to actually be honest with ourselves. And it's particularly hard for women to do that, because we've been taught or socialized our entire lives to believe that making other people happy should be our highest priority. And so then when you work a job like an assistant, and it's actually literally your job to make those around you happy, it becomes even more challenging to prioritize yourself, because we're actually getting paid to make other people, to take care of other people and make them happy. So it really does come down to, like, you know, realizing that our emotions are our emotions. And you can feel anything, and you don't have to take action from your emotion if you're not ready to yet. Or you don't have to take action on, like, so say you want, know you want to leave your job, but you're not sure that you want to take action. You don't have to take action yet. Like, you can wait and figure out what exactly it is. Like, you can have somebody walk you through that process. And I will say that I was in therapy through that entire year. I'm a big fan of therapy. I'm a big fan of coaching for these reasons, because you actually need somebody to kind of guide you and point out when you're lying to yourself, or when you're not being true to who you really are, and when you're people pleasing versus when you're actually acting from a place of joy and love. And it can be hard to know the difference when you're just trying to figure out, when you've been out of touch with that emotional piece of yourself for so long. And it's funny, even me now, like, I'll have to, like, take a minute and drop in every now and then and check in with myself. I'm like, what's going on for me? And then I'll just write it all out. I'll do, like, a thought download and I'll write it all out so I can actually see what's going on for me. But it's really, it can be very intense when you first start to be honest with yourself and you haven't been for so long. That process can be very intimidating and very intense, for sure.
Yeah, but it's great when you can work through it. Because you, I think it can be this sense of, it's kind of like, I liken it to being just peaceful, because the external pleasing part can be removed to a certain extent, okay? You know, like, not all of it, but I totally relate to what you're saying about this being something that assistants struggle with because of the nature of the role. So I feel like anyone in a service-based job, the expectation, if you're right, is to kind of make other people feel better about what you're doing. And if you're not getting the validation from work, or you're not getting what you need from it as a person, it's not fulfilling you, then that's a long time to be in a place where you have that kind of disconnect, or being, again, kind of like out of alignment with your own values. And yeah, when people kind of socialize us, our value is to value literally other people's opinions, isn't it?
That is such a good point, Hen. Yes, 100%. And I think too, like, it all comes back to developing a trust of yourself first and foremost. So Like if I would, you know, if anybody is listening and they don't know how they're feeling and they aren't sure where to start, it's making one commitment to yourself and following through on it. And here's why this is hard. Here's why that's hard is because our perfectionist brains go to, well, if I'm going to follow through on that, then I'm going to do B, C, D, and E also,
yes,
you know,
100%.
Yeah. Cause we want to do the whole package right away. Instead of making one change in our lives and sticking with that one change, it can be very uncomfortable to actually just make one change because of that perfectionist thing. But if you will make that one change and make it consistently, you'll develop such a better trust of yourself because you followed through on your own, on a promise you made to yourself. And I feel like we are so good at honoring our commitments to other people and putting other people first that our self-trust goes by the wayside. So we really need to start working on that self-trust piece first. Like we need to know that we have our own backs. We need to know that if things fall apart, that we're going to be there for ourselves first before we can be there for others in a really meaningful way, in a way that isn't people-pleasing or trying to look outward for our self-worth. And what I love about like this doing one thing, and I'm actually going to teach a course, I think, on this. I'm going to call it the one thing. is that like we need to also approach ourselves in case we happen to miss the mark one day. We just need to approach ourselves with total self-love and compassion like we would our best friend. And in doing these two things, like having compassion for ourselves and following through on just one thing, self-trust can build. And then you begin to trust yourself, and then you begin to trust that you are able to hear your emotions and know your emotions and what you're thinking, and able to know what your opinion is aside from everyone else's opinion, and able to know where you stand on certain things that are important to you and what you value. Like it can be hard to even get in touch with your values if you don't really know how to access that piece of you of self-trust. And so, I think that's something that we as women, and especially as assistants, need to work on is just increasing that self-trust. It's really interesting. As my self-trust has grown, my self-concept has gotten so much better. And I was actually meeting with a client yesterday and her self-concept has improved dramatically since we started working together, to the point now where her executive notices it and can be like, so you're actually doing operations, you know, and you're actually doing this, this, that, and the other. Can I get feedback? Cause they work with clients on operations. And she thought she was floored. She thought she'd never see the day when her boss would ask, you know, her opinion. But like, I think that she's showing up differently because she's really worked on that self-trust, self-concept piece of like knowing what she's worth and knowing what she brings to the table and knowing that she has her own back and knowing that she knows more, that she's more solid in those things. And it can be really hard until you're there to actually access. Yeah.
And why do you think it is so hard to do one thing? Before we go, we talk about self concept because I really, really want to. When you were talking about doing one thing for yourself, that I think can create one of two things in someone. That, like you said, you agree to do one thing and then you have a go at yourself saying it's not enough things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not enough. Like I know, really, not me specifically, but I'm just saying, you know, as someone thinking about it, you know, if I could do one thing, that's great, but probably I should do all these other things as well. So if it was like exercise, for example, then I should do diet, then I should do this, then I should do other self-care things. You know, like your brain goes to all these different places. Or you start and you do really well for a certain period of time. And like you said, there's a day where you can't do it or you don't really want to do it and something happens. And then you can really beat yourself up about that day as if it's the end of everything, that you've ruined the whole thing. And I wonder if people get caught up in that pattern of either it being not enough or you didn't do a good enough job anyway, like two sticks that you can grab whenever you want to kind of beat yourself up about it are available. What can people do in situations like that where they get, or what do you feel as a good way to help yourself through those things? Because one thing I felt like when I didn't understand why I was not in alignment, one thing I got so good at was having a go at myself. Like I was so hard on myself. So I just wondered if you had kind of advice or an idea about how to move through those things when they can come up, which I feel like derails people really easily. Those things can be almost instant revert back to not doing the one thing.
Yes. So the one thing is really powerful for this reason, because when you only focus on doing one thing for yourself and you're going to be consistent, I find that two things come up, like you were talking about. Either we beat ourselves up on the back end for not doing it right or not doing enough, or we're like, oh, it's just one thing. Like yeah. it's just a break. And I feel fine. I can just work through this break. Right. And so we aren't actually honoring that promise to ourselves. So we either let the promise go or we beat ourselves up. And so the one thing is a great opportunity for growth in that we can actually look at what's going on in our brains and we can get really clear on the thoughts that come up. And so how I like to do this is I like to just do a thought download and I like to write down all the thoughts that are coming in my brain. And this can be done post-mortem, like after the fact. So, or this can be done in the moment. Like I found success with both. Mm-hmm. So if you, particularly if you decide you're just going to let the one thing go, which is very common when we start out because we just don't have that trust built up with ourselves and we're building trust with ourselves. So that's very common. That's a very common go-to when we first start out with the one thing. I would just recommend that like when you, you know, if you, whatever decision you make, if you decide to just not do the one thing that day, then I would just recommend that you actually do a thought download as to why, but in from a place of total self-compassion. Like we want to focus on self-love and self-compassion here and not beat ourselves up. And so how I like to access self-compassion and how that works for me is that I only speak to myself the way I would my best friend. So I may give my best friend some tough love and be like, okay, I hear you. I love you. I don't agree with you. And here's why. Mm-hmm. And so we want to be honest with ourselves, but we also want to show ourselves grace and compassion because our friend wouldn't be our best friend if we weren't compassionate and gracious towards her. So we really want to show up from that place of self-love and self-compassion as we're doing our thought downloads. Then we want to look at what's actually happened in our brain. And oftentimes I found that even just the acknowledgement of what was going on in my brain at the time will help me reset and help me recalibrate and help me have a deeper understanding of myself.
Yeah.
And then the only thing, the one guideline that I have for this is like, don't change your one thing. Don't change your one thing at all. Like make the one thing, the one thing for a set amount of time, whether it's a month or 3 months or a year, however you want the one thing, however long you want to do that one thing. To make that one thing like the one thing and then really get clear on what comes up for you, whether it's perfectionism or whether it's just giving up on yourself and with the understanding that the goal is to build integrity with yourself.
Mm. No, I think that's so interesting. My one thing took me 2.5 years to... until it created a lot of traction. You know, like I started and God, it was so irritating. It really was. I really hated it for the first about 6 months. It was like, and I was like, oh, this is so annoying. This is irritating. I've got to do this thing. You know, like the thoughts that would come up were just so wild. Like I didn't think about things like that normally. And all it was, right, I mean, I'll tell you what it was. I was just exercising every day, okay? Mm-hmm. The download of rubbish that happened in my mind, from excuses to I can't do it, it's too hard, this hurts. I mean, God, the talk was just, I think it did really take 2.5 years until I was finally like, I'd run out of stuff to say about what I was doing. Finally, it ended. And there just wasn't anything else to say. And it was quiet. But I think the thing was, is that every time I'd done something like that before, I was looking for a result. Okay. And I think that's where I made a mistake. Again, I was doing that one thing to have a result somewhere externally in my life. Mm. You feel that that's something that people do. They go into something with this, you know, like I had to remove the how I would look aspect of my working out, because it never really genuinely wasn't about that. If I'd focused on that, I reckon I could have given up way before. Like, I'd just be like, well, it didn't work, you know, like whatever it was. Do you think that's why we sort of trip ourselves up?
Well, yeah, because it's all about perfectionism, and perfectionism is all externally motivated. Like, we need to do something for ourselves, just for ourselves.
Yeah,
and then we need, and then we need to sit with the discomfort of like realizing that all of those thoughts are going to come up and they're all going to surface. And that's a very uncomfortable place to be. And then regardless though, we're still going to show up for ourselves day after day or week after week or whatever the interval is that you want to, whatever your one thing interval is, yeah, that we actually show up for ourselves. And, but don't you feel though that like your self-trust and the fact that you have your own back now is totally worth it? So don't you feel like...
No, yeah. I mean, I don't regret it for a minute. It was... And I use this term, and I don't mean this in a flippant way. It was a life-changing decision.
Yeah.
It really was. And I think I had a hunch that it was, because things were bad. For me personally, I was in a bad spot. And I had a hunch I needed to do it. And so it was one of the first things I trusted myself on for a long time. So I decided that I would do it. I didn't even really want to work out every day. You know, like I didn't even really want to do any of these things, but I thought I'm just going to go with it. Like it was one of those random things. I was a bit desperate, I think. I was like, I'll take whatever inspiration is happening, I'm going to take it and I'll try it, because I was out of ideas for myself. And so I think that it really led me through all kinds of things to the point where I do it every day, or as every day as I can now. Like, it doesn't have to be every day anymore, but I do it literally to keep myself in a position where I have time for myself.
Mm.
It might just be as simple as that.
Yeah.
Space for myself and my own thoughts. And you're right, it does change things. It just seems to me, things like that, when I was really in a bad place, I just thought, this is so simple. Like, it was just irritating. I was like, well, I'm not going to do it because that's too easy. It must be really, really hard. Everything I try and, you know, I had that perception that it must be incredibly difficult, otherwise it wasn't worth it. Do you think that's perfectionism too? Is that what other people suffer from?
100%. Yes, especially. Yes, yes, absolutely. I do think. And I think that, well, that's just an excuse our brain gives us, right?
Yes.
Because we like, our brain likes the status quo. So anytime you try and incorporate something new long-term, like it took you 2.5 years. I want all the listeners out there to hear that it took Hen 2.5 years to finally slow the chatter in her brain. But at the end, like, you've developed self-trust as a result, which is just amazing. And your self-concept has improved also, you know, because now you're somebody who works out. Who knew, you know, and how great is that?
Who knew? Yeah. I still don't even think of myself like that. You know, it's weird, isn't it? But tell me about this self-concept. What does it mean and why is it important?
Yeah. So self-concept is basically the underlying ideas you have about yourself that are influencing all aspects of your life. So we all have certain beliefs about ourselves that are just unchecked, or they just are what they are. And then they end up affecting, or self-concept ends up affecting, like, our lives, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, prior to my stroke, my self-concept was that I was really good at helping other people. I was really good at making everyone around me happy. Like that was my primary self-concept back then. And then after my stroke, my self-concept kind of shifted to, like, you know what? I'm really good at taking care of myself. Like, I want to be really good at taking care of myself. And so I just started taking action from that place of having already achieved that thing. And in my career, this has looked like I started out working as a receptionist at a consulting firm in Boston. And my boss, Marianne, she was the executive assistant to our CEO, and she also was our office manager. And I just loved her relationship with her executive. And I'm like, that's what I want. That's where I want to go. So I saw her, I hadn't stepped into that self-concept yet, but I saw her as my example. And she was also my mentor, and I still deeply love her to this day. Mm-hmm. We still stay in touch. But what was really great about that was that I knew where I wanted to go. And so I think at every level of my career, I would just step into the next version of getting closer to that. So for me, like, even before I was there, I'm like, oh yeah, no, I'm totally the assistant to high net worth individuals. I can totally tackle that. And so then I got that role. And then I'm like, oh no, I'm an amazing personal and executive assistant. I can handle the personal items and the professional items. I can manage the books. I can manage everything. So then I kind of, like, stepped into that role, yeah, just from a place of, like, having achieved a goal ahead of time in my head. So there are a couple different ways to arrive at a self-concept. And that's one intentional way of doing it, is just to set a goal and then to arrive there in your head before the fact. So yeah, imagining how you'll feel when you've achieved it, like thinking of ways that you can add value on that level now, you know, mm-hmm. and then there are the unchecked beliefs about yourself. So money beliefs are often one that I see come up a lot with clients, like, you know, they've only ever gotten by, and they've had an example set for them their entire lives. And so they strive for that example. Yeah. And so, you know, they end up in roles that pay less, which consequently tend to be roles where people value their assistant less, because we value what we pay for. Right. Yeah. So really working on acknowledging, or actually recognizing, that part of yourself is key in achieving whatever you want to achieve, and then kind of embodying from that place of having already achieved it. So that's kind of the idea of self-concept. I hope that was clear enough.
Yeah, no, I think so completely. Because the thing is, I suppose the piece there is that you have a self-concept whether you realize it or not, and you're acting on it whether you're conscious of what it actually is or not. And that's the problem, is that it's going to play out whether you're involved or not. You know, like, the consequences of what you think about yourself will play out whether you're doing it on purpose or not, which is kind of scary, because this is something that I'm sure both of us see in both of our, in our jobs, and that for assistants, the confidence piece is essential for any kind of ascension in your career and financial achievement. And that's a difficult thing to acknowledge, because you can change it, and you really can change your salary just by how you perceive yourself. I really genuinely believe it, because I've seen people do it time and time again.
Yes, I did it. Like, when I moved to Denver, I wasn't sure what the going rate was for an assistant. So I went in at like Idaho rates, but it was a lot higher here. And then I'm like, no, I require this now, because that's just what I require now, you know? And so, like, you're absolutely right. We, whether or not we realize it our self-concept does affect everything. And the confidence piece is huge. It really is huge. It's not only huge for our salaries, but it's also huge for how we show up.
Yeah.
And how we show up for ourselves and how we show up in our roles and at what level we value ourselves is really at, like, nobody's going to value you more than you value yourself. So if you can value yourself more, the chances of other people valuing you more, it's a lot higher.
Yeah.
And people will rise to the occasion, I have found. So I think that that's an important piece too, is like, how do we boost our confidence? How do we do that? Well, I think it all begins with self-trust. There again, it goes back to like trusting yourself, having your own back, really doing the hard work of not beating yourself up when you make a mistake, you know? So. Oh,
for sure. Letting that go fast is really important. And so by developing the self-trust, do you think that the self-concept can kind of like emerge over time? You know, as you're more aware of maybe creating or cultivating it, do you think, you know, you kind of see things differently? You start, your sort of perception starts to shift and change about what might be interesting to you or things that you're now interested in. Is it like, is it just a sort of ripple effect for people?
That's what I found to be true for me. And that's what I found to be true for all of my clients. Like all of my clients have had some transformation. And I was actually, I'm actually working with a gal. It's really funny, on personal stuff. Like she's going to be transitioning out of her career. And we were talking about her transition. And so she wants to like really put an emphasis on health and all that sort of stuff. But she actually emailed me a month ago and she, or a month or two ago. And she's like, Annie, my executive has noticed that my performance has improved. And the first words out of my mouth were, it's because of my coach. And I was thinking about that. And like, how can that be? Because we aren't even really coaching on work stuff. You really are not. But I think when you build confidence in one area, it automatically spills over into another area. And you show up differently as a human for your life and for your career. And I've just seen that to be true time and again with my clients and then also with myself, you know. And I feel like it's just, I think oftentimes we think of growth as this destination we want to get to, like we want to already have arrived. But like, that's not how life works and that's not how growth works. So, you know, as I evolve as a human too, I've noticed for myself just how much, how differently I show up. And my brain is not the same brain as it was a year ago. And that's kind of a fun thought to think that like my brain has actually changed, which is a lot of fun. And it's also fun to like, to meet the next version of myself as I go through life. That's just a fun concept to think about and a fun place to be for sure.
I think that sounds great. I love that idea because I don't know. I wonder when these kind of things started to sort of move into the sort of consciousness of people. Like I certainly wasn't brought up with a lot of these ideas, or I didn't know where to go and find information about it or, you know, understand it more as part of my career. There wasn't a lot out there. And this, I'm so encouraged that we're all encouraged to look more at ourselves as a whole person rather than just a professional person who's going to work, because I think that that idea is very damaging for people to put on an endless like facade of this is professional me and now I'm at work, and not integrate all the different parts of themselves, which is a huge process, right? It takes a long time, it takes a lifetime. Like, none of us are any destination yet. And I'm so glad that these conversations are more available to people.
Yeah, I think too that COVID helped with that, actually. People working from home were forced to then like juggle the kids and the job and everything like that. And then they're left going, wait a minute, this like, I'm so used to compartmentalizing everything. And now I can no longer do that. Like, I think the last year has kind of forced people to look at like, how can I live a more balanced life overall? Or not balanced, I hate that word because it holds different meaning for everyone, but like, how can I actually integrate these areas of my life, and how can I make some like symbiotic relationship between work and home, and how can I still feel fulfilled, and how can I take care of myself and my kids and my job? Like, how can I make it all work? It's been a really interesting year that way. I know for me, for sure. And then I just see it a lot, like in the people that I serve and in my community as well. Like, and I think it's kind of a panic for a lot of people. How can I make it work? And there are certainly some challenges with that. But then there's also this beautiful understanding that like we are a whole person, and our lives are our whole lives. As well.
Oh, I agree. I think it has been a terrible time, but I think that it has pushed people to acknowledge that people are not just there to serve the company that they work for. They have lives, emotions, responsibilities, difficulties, and struggle. And I'm very, very confident that companies will be judged in the future on how they have looked after their staff during this time, because mm-hmm. I think that awareness and understanding has brought people to a place where they are more reluctant to accept shoddy treatment.
Yes, and that would be my hope for all of us, is that we can all, by not accepting it, raise the standard. Like, but, you know, I feel like if enough people stand up and are like, this is unacceptable to me, then there will be change, because people want to keep their employees happier. I would hope they would want to keep them happy, at least happy enough not to, you know, have a lot of turnover. So, yeah.
And I feel that a lot of what you've spoken about will really resonate with people who've found themselves in very difficult scenarios over the last year, whether their role was made redundant or, you know, just the myriad of uncertainty and stress around employment and fear for so many people that if they're employed now, they may not be. When things start changing, the economy starts shifting, we're still on shaky ground, aren't we, for a lot of people. So
yeah,
I know that what you said will help so much.
It's definitely a trying time for sure. And it's definitely actually what propelled me to shift Whole Assistant to be more focused on like the whole person and taking better care of ourselves. And I just have such a heart for what we do as assistants. And I just have such a heart for encouraging all of us to take excellent care of ourselves and to land higher on our own priority list for sure.
I love that. I think everything that you do that comes across from your videos to all the interactions that you have with people, you can see that there's a huge amount of care for others in what you're doing. And I really appreciate the kind of space that you hold for other people about caring for all of them rather than just the one that we're most used to, which is, as we said at the beginning, to kind of like improve on things that you could do in your career to get better at, because that's still part of it. But those things get easier, I find, in life to improve on if you are in more of alignment with your own value system, because then it's easy to cherry pick the things that work and that you really need help to improve on, rather than just the endless quest of improving for the sake of improving.
Yeah. And I think there's almost like an attitude of insufficiency almost, like, you know, like, oh, I have to improve so that I can be good enough, you know? And then we beat ourselves up there too. Like, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about actually like getting aligned and finding what out what our values are so that we can actually focus and give ourselves a gift of focus on like one or two areas of improvement at a time. And then we experience success with those. And then we just want to keep going like in the best way. I think that there's such a thing as like growth fatigue.
Oh, sure.
Where we just want to be somewhere and we want to be there faster. But it's not, true growth doesn't happen fast. It happens over time. Like you're 2.5 years of doing one thing.
That was like, kind of extreme, wasn't it? 2.5 years. I don't think it'll take that long for everyone.
No, but if it does, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that at the same time. And so, I think it takes however long it takes. And like, I'm not a very patient person. And I think that's my biggest challenge is just allowing myself to go at a pace that is reasonable. Yeah. And checking in with myself and asking myself, am I doing this from a place of self-love? Or am I doing this because I'm dealing with, because I feel so uncomfortable that I just want to have arrived? Like,
Yes. And
then acting from a place of self-love and then recentering around that and recalibrating around that. So that's my, certainly one of my biggest challenges is like, I'm totally type A. I totally want to be there already.
So much so. That's why it took me so long to keep having a go at myself. I was like, this is taking way too long. Come on.
Chop, chop.
Yeah. Like, what is wrong with me? So good. I really enjoyed talking to you about these things. Thank you for sharing these intensely personal elements of your journey that have been so life-changing for you. And I think it's very comforting that it has given you so many different opportunities and processes and experience and paths that have led you to this place, even coming from such a difficult and dark moment in your life, emotionally and physically, that it's a very important message to share, because it gives so many other people hope that whatever their circumstances are, they can find ways through, and there are people that will help them find ways through too.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. And definitely, you guys, if you need help with this, reach out to somebody, you know, a friend, a coach, a therapist, somebody who can actually help you kind of get clarity on what will bring you joy in your life, what will help you to know how to better access your emotional self, and those deep parts of you that I feel like go unacknowledged from time to time. I think we all need that help from time to time, for sure. So
absolutely. And you can see Annie in the her YouTube videos on the Whole Assistant website as well. They're there, aren't they? That I think give one of the things I love about your videos is that you always ask people a question of themselves. So you outline a topic that you're going to talk about and that you discuss that topic, but there are two or three times throughout the video where you ask someone the question about how they feel about those things or how does that relate to their life. And that's super powerful because it gives you the chance, even if you watch them, they're quite short, some of them, aren't they? But giving yourself the chance to pause the video and reflect on the topic and how it makes you feel is just a great way to keep checking in with yourself, because the more questions you ask of yourself, the more likely you are to find out how you really feel about things and not just the kind of stock answers that we all give, like, how are you? I'm fine. You know, I actually think about it.
Yeah. And I designed those videos to be really short for that reason. Because I want to give people food for thought and I want them to think about things. And I also want to hear from them too. So that's why I ask the questions like, please leave a comment. I want to know. And I'm sure that solidarity of knowing that you're not the only one going through something, like, that's very powerful. Yeah. And just knowing that we all deal with these things, right? Like, it's just the part of part of the human experience for sure. So yeah, my website is wholeassistant.com if you guys want to check it out.
Yep, and I'll put all the details of how you can get in touch with Annie in the show notes. Thank you so much. It's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you, Hen. I always enjoy our conversations.
Wasn't that amazing? I feel like she was so generous sharing her experiences in that way and for walking us through ways that we can really look after ourselves and make change and do it in a kind and loving and supportive way rather than my default, which has been to push really hard to get the things that I want, which didn't really work anyway. So I loved speaking to her. If you enjoyed the episode and you got some value from it, please share on social media. Take a screenshot, share it with everybody, because the more people that can hear about Annie's incredible story and the work that she's doing, I think the better we're all going to be. We will be back next week with another guest for you, and please rate, review. It helps other people find the podcast. Have a fantastic, fantastic week. Enjoy your week and take care.